is Africa News Tonight on the Voice of America.
Hello and welcome. Welcome to VOA Africa. Thank you for joining us. I'm Ihezuo Wuhib in Washington, and here is what's coming up on Africa News Tonight.
The demand will be high, access will be limited. Everybody will want to have his shot, if I may say so. In that kind of situation, this vaccine is a liquid gold for these criminal syndicates. Huh? They will exploit this situation by either stealing the vaccine or by counterfeiting it.
That's Marias Schneider, who leads a Mauritius-based law firm that prosecutes cases of falsified medicines for some of the world's largest pharmaceutical firms. Details coming up. Also, border demarcation disagreements escalate between Sudan and Ethiopia, and vote counting continues from Niger's runoff presidential election on Sunday. All these and more ahead on Africa News Tonight. We start with our top story. Sudan says it took a dim view of claims by Ethiopia that the Sudanese military was using their border conflict for the benefit of a third party. Sudan says it wants Ethiopia to observe a 1902 demarcation agreement that was reaffirmed in 1972. Ethiopia says it would no longer recognize a colonial era deal and wants Sudanese forces to pull out from areas they recently took back before it can negotiate a settlement of the dispute. Former Sudanese ambassador to the U.S., Kadir Haroun, discussed these developments with VOA senior analyst Mohammed Al-Shenawi.
This is a very strange situation because the Sudanese army currently is inside Sudan, not outside Sudan. So to ask them to pull out of Sudanese territory is very strange because there is maps and there is agreements which they have copies of. We have copies of the United Kingdom, the United States. The maps are there to decide which territories belonging to Ethiopia, which territories belonging to Sudan. So it is very strange. It is very hostile to ask the Sudanese army to pull out of their own land, which is decided almost a century ago, and hope this situation should be calm in this very critical area for the benefit of peace for Sudanese and Ethiopians on both parties.
South Sudan has been trying to mediate between the two nations to avert a confrontation that leads to war. But Ethiopia's foreign ministry said that third-party mediation was not needed to resolve the border crisis if the Sudanese army evacuates the area it has forcefully occupied. What's the way out then?
Well, the party of the conflict that rejected mediation by a third party is the one on the wrong side of the argument. If you have the maps and agreements substantiated your position, why are you afraid of mediation? If it is an Ethiopian land, present your proofs. This is could easily be done. And show it to a third party. This is to resolve the issue in minutes. So I think the only way out today is similar, which has always been discussion and negotiations and not war. There is no animosity, fortunately, between the Sudanese and Ethiopian people. They have always had cordial relations with each other. Let it remain that way.
That was former Sudanese ambassador to the U.S., Kadir Haroun, speaking with VOA senior analyst Mohammed Al-Shenawi. Vote counting continues from Niger's runoff presidential election Sunday. For more on the process, VOA's Chididu Ofor spoke with VOA Frank to Africa Service Chief Timothy Donangmai.
Now, and according to our local stringer, the provisional results could be reached by Tuesday or Wednesday. So far, they have results from 62 electoral districts out of 266, and ruling party candidate Bazoum is leading with 337,200 votes. That's about 51.4% of the provisional results.
As the vote counting proceeds, there's also some tragic news coming out of that area. How is that impacting this election?
It's not impacting the election because those incidents happened in some remote places. There was one attack on Sunday in which an electoral agent was killed near Diffa. That's an area where Boko Haram is very active. There's also an incident in the Tillabéri region, which is west near Mali, where electoral agents, about seven of them, ran over a landmine in their truck, so they were killed. But this is not impacting the electoral process, at least from what we heard from Niger.
So far, any complaints about the counting process?
No complaints so far, but opposition groups are threatening to reject the result if they find out that there was some kind of fraud going on. So they say they are keeping their own tally, so they know what to say once they get the provisional result from the Electoral Commission.
When do you expect all this to be wrapped up and a new president named for Niger?
Once the Electoral Commission makes the results available, then there will be a 28-day period to wrap the whole process, name a new president.
That was VOA Freight to Africa Service Chief Timothy Donangmai speaking with International Edition's Chinedu Ofor. Italy's ambassador to the Democratic Republic of Congo was killed in an ambush in eastern Congo today, according to the Italian Foreign Ministry. In a brief statement, the ministry says Luca Attanasio was killed near the city of Goma while traveling in a convoy of the United Nations Stabilization Mission in Congo. It says an Italian military policeman who accompanied the envoy was also killed in the attack. Reuters, citing the Virunga National Park, reports the convoy was attacked near the town of Kanaya Mahoro as part of a kidnap attempt. Millions of COVID-19 vaccines are to be rolled out this year as Africa tries to end the pandemic. But Interpol is warning of an onslaught of criminal activity linked to vaccines. Darren Taylor reports from Johannesburg.
About 2 months ago, police tracked cargo from O.R. Tambo Airport near Johannesburg to a warehouse nearby. When they opened the boxes, says Mulungisi Wando, of the South African Health Products Regulatory Authority, the officers called for help.
Since when I got there, then they saw pre-filled syringes and they are written in Chinese because the owner of the consignment was Chinese. The two people that were at the site, the owner of the warehouse and the Chinese owner, were arrested on spot.
Wando says the syringes arrived via Singapore disguised as cosmetic injections. His investigators say they'd been advertised on social media as COVID-19 vaccines.
They've been trying to trace if there were units released into the country. Remember, the risk now is if people are injected with those vaccines, firstly, we don't know where they are manufactured. Secondly, we don't know what were their storage conditions from where they've manufactured up to where they were stored. The risk is the stability of biological, as you know. If they are stored in not good conditions, it's not viable and it can change to something else. And the risk is the immune systems of people reacting to those things.
The World Health Organization calls Africa the dumping ground for almost half of all substandard and falsified medicines found globally every year. This is because medicine regulations are very weak across most of the continent, says Cynthia Genele, Director of Africa Engagement at the International Federation of Pharmaceutical Manufacturers and Associations.
We found very toxic substances even in the cases of medicines. So first you are not cured, your disease is continuing, and then you have seen cases of people who were dying because of the product they were taking, which was a toxic product.
The WHO says three quarters of all fake medicines are made in China and India, two countries expected to supply most of Africa's COVID-19 shots. Marius Schneider leads a Mauritius-based law firm that prosecutes cases of falsified medicines for some of the world's largest pharmaceutical firms. he's keeping a close watch on Africa's vaccine rollouts.
The demand will be high, access will be limited. Everybody will want to have his shot, if I may say so. In that kind of situation, this vaccine is a liquid gold for these criminal syndicates. Huh? They will exploit this situation by either stealing the vaccine or by counterfeiting it.
South African pharmacologist and WHO medicines advisor Andy Gray says governments want to give vaccines as fast as possible, so they'll ignore rules that would usually apply.
Wherever you've got a problem in the distribution chain where the normal actors in the chain are being bypassed, that creates a vulnerability. That's a very ripe opportunity to bring a totally falsified product into that market, because it's going through an illegal step anyway.
Nigerian investigative journalist Ruona Meyer has infiltrated organized crime groups in West Africa. Her work has exposed government members and pharmaceutical company employees working in concert with criminals to traffic illicit codeine.
So we already have the same time-old systems that are a recipe for fake production and stealing, interception, like pharma narcotics, like COVID vaccines. Definitely, it's going to happen because we've seen it already happen with personal protective equipment like masks and tests as well.
Schneider says COVID-19's not a pandemic to organized crime, but an opportunity to make 1,000% profit on a single falsified jab.
As soon as this whole problem popped up, you had criminal syndicates everywhere and even sophisticated governments, Germany, Belgium, have been set up by these syndicates. When you come to developing countries, the government is also involved in all of these activities. And you have corruption, bribery, and the like. Huh? But, you know,
early last year, Oxford University infectious diseases specialist Professor Paul Newton warned that the world risked a parallel pandemic of falsified COVID-19 medications unless there was a global plan for production and equitable distribution of, particularly, vaccines. No such plan was ever made, and countries continue their individual, isolated scrambles for jabs. Experts say Newton's warning is becoming a prediction, especially in Africa. For VOA News, I'm Darren Taylor in Johannesburg.
South Sudan officials are insisting that their Ugandan counterparts enforce a strict ban on booming sales of crude gin and the drug Mira across the border. Catherine Nambi reports from Kampala.
The trade in the local gin brewed by communities in Uganda's border districts, as well as Mira, a drug commonly known as Mairungi, was raised during a bilateral security meeting between Uganda and South Sudan. Alberio Tobiola Oromo is a former governor of South Sudan's Torit state. He blames the sale of the gin and Mira on rising crime in a number of South Sudan border states.
Let us stop it by all means. It's creating insecurity. Whenever they become drunk, they start firing themselves. They sold these 20 liters or 40 liters with a very big bull. And this one motivated them to go and steal kettles. So for us to stop this cattle raiding, we need to make a joint work according to the resolution.
Alphonse Muraz is a member of parliament representing South Sudan's Eastern Equatorial State. He has called for joint coordination on both sides of the border to enforce a total ban on the sale of the illicit commodities.
People are drinking. Many of them died. And I don't think this is a drunk here in Uganda. But in South Sudan, it becomes a habit to some people. So we don't want this goo again to continue being taken to South Sudan for sale. It destroys our people. I don't know if the government of Uganda can stop that.
Leaders in Uganda's border districts are also disturbed about the illicit trade. Geoffrey Ocheng Osborne is the resident district commissioner of Uganda's Amuru district. He says they have received several complaints from South Sudan calling for a ban on such sales.
We are aware that there is not a law that prohibits the transaction. But the people are now involved in cross-border trade, and they're using our porous borders to see that they sneak this to South Sudan. And it's going to cause an international disagreement between Uganda and the sister country, because we are aware that in South Sudan it's not needed.
Patrick Odong Orede, another official in Amuru district, says the security team has put some places on high alert and heightened border surveillance.
We are going to use the security personnel and the other sister agencies so that we bring this practice to a standstill. The security personnel are going to be brought on board so that they man these porous borders where the transactions take place.
Another meeting on the issue is planned between the two sides. This is Catherine Nambi for VOA News in Kampala.
Praised long, long ago for success in the fight against COVID-19, Botswana is under pressure to finally shut down schools. From Habrone, Botswana, reporter Mokandisi Dube has the details.
In December, Botswana hit one of the world's lowest COVID-19 death tolls at 38, but the number has risen to 226 within 6 weeks, with the spike blamed on festive season activities. Despite the surge, Botswana schools have remained open amid concerns that more than 1,000 students have been infected since the start of the new term last month. Education Sector Union Secretary General Tabokani Rari says they are disappointed the government has rejected calls to close schools.
The situation as it is has been quite dangerous to both the teachers and the students in schools. But, you know, our worry as the teacher trade union is that it looks like it's business as usual. There is no response in relation to the highest rate of infection that we are seeing.
The government says it cannot close schools as the risk of infection rises for students once they are out of school. Rari urges teachers to stay away from the classroom if they deem the situation unsafe.
Our COVID-19 task team did not see the things the way we see them. One of the important things that the teacher trade unions have said is that where they are glaring non-compliance to the COVID-19 protocols, the members should not put their lives into risk. They should not enter those environments where the COVID-19 protocols are not adhered to.
The task force team says it will continue monitoring the situation at schools, but for now, despite the high cases, there is no need to close. While schools remain open, President Mokgweetsi Masisi's government has rejected calls to lift a ban on alcohol sales. Botswana has recorded 25,802 cases, with the daily average rising from 180 in December to 400 last month. For VOA, this is Mkondisi Dube in Habaroni, Botswana.
Talented filmmakers are competing for prizes at the first mobile film festival in Africa. Founder Bruno Smaja says 51 films from 23 countries on the continent are being showcased online. He says they are all just 1 minute long and had to be shot on mobile phones, which did away with the usual financial constraints of filmmaking. Reporter Vicky Stark spoke to Smaja.
The call for entries went out in the middle of last year and drew 497 films from 38 African countries. Bruno Smaja says the standard is high because many of the entrants have some sort of filmmaking experience or are self-taught.
Most of them have no cash, have no money to invest, but how much energy is investing, how much time they're spending, how much desire and hope they're putting in.
Smaja says with no prescribed theme, filmmakers were free to create what they wanted. He says many chose social topics.
We were very proud that some filmmakers have decided to approach LGBTQ issues, because as we all know, the situation over the continent is in some countries still very, very, very dangerous. There's death penalty in some countries or jail where gay people or trans people can be thrown.
One such filmmaker is Sofiane Henani.
My movie is Rester ou Partir, Stay or Live, and it talks about sexual freedom in Morocco.
Henani says he belongs to a youth movement that is against the repressive laws against homosexuality and sex before marriage. He says many young people believe this is unjust. In South Africa, where same-sex marriage is allowed, there is still prejudice against members of the LGBTQ community in some places. Filmmaker Ernst Junior Tamane's piece titled I Am is about a transgender woman in a township who survived rape.
Hello, I met her at the mall, and then 2 months down the line, we came up with the idea, showed how you live your life as a transgender.
Nigerian Foreign Clay Edges' The Bride is a beautifully shot and paced piece. He says he heard about the competition 4 days before the closing date and called his cousins to make the movie. Edge says they wanted to draw attention to the forbidden topic of child brides.
Every girl child deserves a better life and a better education.
Then Kenyan Neha Manoj's The Face Mask on Sale shows a pregnant mother trying to keep her unborn baby safe. Manoj says she's honored to have made it to the festival's official selection of 51 and, as a Kenyan Indian, wants to tell stories about inclusion.
Because I'm a fourth generation, so I'm practically a Kenyan, but because of my skin color, they kind of like separate me from everyone else.
A panel of judges will select the winners to be announced at an award ceremony in Tunis in March. Smaja says winners are given grants to produce a film with a professional producer. This year's total prize money to be split among several categories, including African female director, is €18,500.
In creating a cycle where the opportunities for the filmmaker is to reach somewhere, not only to make a film, to go to a festival, but to reach somewhere. Some of the winners in the past years have already made a future film.
To view the films, you can visit the website www.mobilefilmfestival.africa. They're also on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram until March 17. This is Vicky Stark for Voice of America News in Cape Town.
In Zimbabwe, civil servants are frustrated that talks to restore the value of their salaries have been snail-paced. Later last year, government had promised a roadmap that would be managed so as to avoid triggering inflation. Reporter Kuzaiza Nawashi has the details.
Obed Masaraure is the president of the Amalgamated Rural Teachers Union of Zimbabwe.
No progress that has been made with regard to salary adjustments. Government had promised a roadmap by 31 January 2021. To date, they have remained silent. We are, however, aware that security sector workers were awarded a raise.
The civil service includes nurses, doctors, teachers, the police service, the army, and many other civil servants employed by government. Gibson Mushangu is the member of the Apex Council that has been representing civil servants in the National Joint Negotiation Council, or NJNC.
We wrote to the government last week here, requesting for an urgent NJNC meeting, but we are looking forward to it this week. We had given government a position. Since then, our position has not been met.
Masarore explains the position of the civil service.
As civil servants, we never at any point asked for a roadmap. We simply asked for the restoration of the value of our 2018 salaries, and we still demand the restoration of a minimum of ESD 520 for the least paid teacher per month.
Professor Paul Mavima is the Minister of Public Service, Labour and Social Welfare. He explains the step to follow after the Apex Council letter.
They have written a letter and it has now been submitted to Minister of Finance for consideration as well as for a framework for negotiation. So the government team is now waiting for that framework to come from Minister of Finance. And then they will meet together with Apex Council for consideration.
Talks of better remuneration dragged on for the bulk of the year and were further amplified by the inflation that would quickly erode the little that government would have added on the civil services income. Inflation has been somewhat stable, and civil servants hope this is not the beginning of more talks that will drag on till year end. For VOA, this is Kudzaizu Nawashi from Harare.
And that wraps up this edition of African News Tonight. I'm Yehisu Hib in Washington. For all the latest developments on the continent 24/7, visit our website at voanews.com. On behalf of our producer, Mokbilia Baro, thank you again for tuning in and choosing